Hello, everybody, and welcome to Season 5 of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast. Jesus valued unity and prayed for it. We believe unity begins with Jesus-centered relationships, gathering around a table, sharing a cup of coffee or a meal. We like to say unity begins with a cup of coffee. So grab a cup and let's get started with another episode of the Common Grounds Unity Podcast.
Hello and welcome to episode 155 of our Common Grounds Unity Podcast. This is our fourth episode in the series on the prophetic imagination, theology, unity, and the arts. Today we're excited to have Kevin Darby, Steve Johnson, and Sherwin McIntosh with us. We were hoping to have Veronique Weber with us to co-host, but she is having trouble getting logged in, and that is all of our losses. So hopefully she will be able to get logged in at some point. But for now, I'll be having this conversation with these wonderful men who have been collaborating with each other for a long time and have done some pretty spectacular thing regarding the arts and ministry. So I'll go ahead and introduce them. First, we got Kevin Darby. He is a director and producer of worship services. He has over 40 years of leading worship ministries. He has produced 7 CDs and written and arranged over 100 spiritual songs. He has written music for films and community events. And in 2024, he created a biannual unity-focused singing event in North Carolina called Together in Harmony. In 2025, he will launch Rediscover the Treasure, an online course to help those who are done with church, but not done with God. Kevin lives in Raleigh, North Carolina with his wife, Cincha, and they have 2 adult children and 2 grandchildren. We also have with us Steve Johnson, who has been a minister for almost 5 decades, and for more than 40 years has been married to the wife of his youth and partner, Lisa. Steve has spoken in Madison Square Garden. He's swam the Hudson River to raise money for his favorite charity. He's the writer, producer, and director of an award-winning short film. He's an author, speaker, and father whose messages are hilarious, soulful, and life-changing. When he's not trying to sell, ride, or make friends on a motorcycle, you can find him in Portland, Oregon, where he is happily serving with the Portland Church of Christ. Finally, we've got Sherwin McIntosh, who is a composer, arranger, and conductor, and concert pianist. He produced shows at various major New York venues, led a daytime arts ministry in New York City, and provided the choir for the John F. Kennedy Jr. Memorial Service. He's directed at the University of Florida Performing Arts Center and directed groups that performed in Carnegie Hall, the Kennedy Center for the Arts, and for the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra. He worked with the Crossroads Singers that toured the U.S. and England, has produced major musicals and co-written Upside Down and Slingshot with longtime friend Steven Johnson. He was the editor and contributor of songs for Songs of the Kingdom, and Sherwin has a master's degree from New England Conservatory, and he and his wife Debbie have held music workshops around the world. As our listeners can tell, y'all have a lot of experience with music and theater and the arts, and so I'm really excited to have y'all in on this conversation. So we're just going to tee up the first question here. Any of you can jump in and y'all can piggyback on each other, but can you tell us about how the three of you came to know each other and how y'all's collaboration began?
Well, that would be in Boston, where I guess the three of us were together for a period early on in Boston. That's when I met Steve, but actually I met Sherwin in one of those tours of Churches of Christ that he did with the Crossroads Singers. They came through Baton Rouge. I was in the campus ministry there at LSU. So that's how we met. And Steve and I were in the ministry initially in Boston together. Then Sherwin moved up there, and the rest is history.
So what I remember is in Boston, Steve had an idea for a musical. It was called He Done Her Wrong. And that was the first thing I think that we worked on together. It was a very campy musical, and it was at the dedication or to the send off for Steve and Lisa to go to New York City. It ended, of course, with New York, New York, and a big production there. But Kevin put together the orchestra, and Steve and I put together the musical. It was our first attempt. Not a lot of original music. I think we did made a few copyright violations there. But it was our first time we collaborated together, and then, of course, Upside Down, I guess. But I think, Kevin, you were dating Cincha, I believe, which was one of the Crossroads singers that I remember, right? Am I remembering that?
Yes. Yeah. But by the time we got to Boston, we were married.
Yeah.
Well, awesome. So we've mentioned Upside Down a couple of times. First, tell me a little bit about Upside Down. What is this musical about? And why do you think so successful?
Steve is the mastermind on this. It was all in his brain, so we'll let him.
What do you remember, Sherwin? You know, my memory is just worthless these days. Did we ever do anything together? You brought up, you know, I was thinking
you
about
look familiar.
That was that send off. I don't know that I could have said it was called He Done It Wrong. I stole that from something I saw in college. And we did that for, we had a banquet every May. Was it a banquet in May, which also that year and the year before, at the banquet was what we used up in Boston to send off our first mission teams to London, Chicago, and to New York City. So, but I remember doing that. I was thinking of something the other day and trying to, anyway, I was, gave us a blast from the past. Upside Down was just a ploy to get Sherwin and Debbie to move to New York City. And so it worked. It was a successful ploy. And I don't think we burned too many bridges doing it, but Sherwin had come up. Sherwin and I had met each other earlier too, when he was leading Crossroads Singers. And Lisa and I were still pretty much newlyweds in Chattanooga, Tennessee. And Sherwin and I became fast friends and would see each other over the years at conferences and stuff like that. And then he moved up to Boston to go to school there. And it was quite a catch for us in Boston to have Sherwin there. Yeah. And there's a lot of memories. There's a lot of memories from then. And, but that was where I first got the idea of stealing Sherwin to go to New York City with me, and it was sort of hard because you were in a deal, right? You had not a contract, but you were sort of like the Crossroads, I think, had sent you to New England Conservatory, and you had to go back for a certain amount of time, and
2 years.
I think we cut the corner on that 2 years, didn't we? Didn't we?
Yeah, we did. We had some changes, and yeah, that put us up there a little bit earlier. Well, not much too much. I kept my commitment. What are you saying?
I never. I wouldn't put you in a bad light, but I'd have stolen you earlier if I could. But that was really a big part of it, was to do something together and to be in New York City together.
That's cool. So tell me the premise of this musical is
I'm not going to do that. I'm not.
You
no,
haven't you, watched you, it yet.
You brought us on here, and you know nothing about our work. Okay. Good morning, John.
Yeah. I have not watched it. I plan to do that. I love theater. I love musicals. But there's nothing like seeing them live.
Yeah.
Well, let me mention one thing. This is really hilarious, but and I'll take advantage of Steve saying he doesn't remember anything, so I could make up about anything right now. Now, it was when we were all in Boston. Steve and Sherwin hadn't gone to New York yet, but I did this. We were doing this World Missions Seminar. And I did something crazy at the Boston Garden, like put an angel up in the rafters, you know, with the big voice and all that. It's very theatrical. Of course, we had no instruments. We sang and did everything in a cappella. And so we used our voices to make instrumental sounds. But anyway, after it was over, it was just this crazy thing. I think Satan and Jesus were in a boxing match or something like that. And as we were all exiting the Boston Garden where we did this, Steve came up to me and said, "Dang it, Darby, if you can do that, I'm going to do my little show." And he went on to mention his the ideas that he had for doing a show about the Book of Acts and a musical. And that's that for me, that's when it started. I'm sure it's you know, from his perspective.
So you started it, Kevin.
No, that's not what I said.
That was I remember that night, like yesterday, actually. There was a song that was, it was more than a song, right, Kevin? It was, I don't know whether to call it evangelical Christianity or what, but this was before we were super, this is way before the Hillsong stuff, you know, of the last, all these super popular things that have happened where a lot of religious music's in the top four, you know, all the music world has changed. And I don't understand it. But at that time, Kevin's a genius writer, but what I think he's better than most people on earth is arranging. And he can take anyone's work and steal it and make it better and make it like he did it. And that's one of the things I love about Kevin. But that song, I'm not sure if we'd ever heard it. But Sherwin might have heard it before. I'm not sure if I had. It's called wasn't it called The Fighter? And it was this, it was part orchestra. It was part choir. It was in the Boston. It was huge. Kevin did this. I mean, it was an enormous. And Tom, oh come on, what Tom that played
Glauner,
Claudius Lysias in Upside Down. Tom Glauner, was the voice. He was the voice.
Yeah.
And so I was sitting there. Sherwin, do you remember we were sitting together watching that? Sherwin was sitting right next to me, watching it, and just going, "Oh, it was one of those moments where Sherwin and I were as close to green with envy as we ever get, because we wanted to do something." And so I got most of the cast for Upside Down. And Drew, Upside Down is a musical based on the Book of Acts. That's where it started. I had the idea, I had the title, I had the name, and I had a desire to hook Sherwin into moving to New York City. And I had Kevin, I had all these people who were so talented, and I was in a position in New York City where we had the right place and the right time and enough money to steal people to come down to New York to rehearse. Kevin practically lived in New York City that summer, I think. And then we did one show. Upside Down was one show, two shows on one day, a matinee and an evening performance at the Boston Opera House. It was 4 hours long. You will never watch it, Drew. You will never, you'll never see it for 4 hours. But it was just one of those things that you really sort of had to be there. There was no air conditioning. It was August, right? It was in August.
Yeah.
It was in August of 1987, and it was hot. It was hot, hot, hot. And we had the foresight to hire a video crew, which was it was $24,000, which was unheard of back then, you know. But I said, we're only going to do this one time. I want a video VHS. I want to record it. And we recorded it. And in our fellowship, which at the time was our world, and in our minds, it was huge. In retrospect, we were a small fellowship, but all around the world, people in our churches, it was all about Upside Down, and the people that performed in it were their heroes. And probably the most memorable part of the entire thing was Teresa. At that time, Teresa Davis Brown sang a song as her name was Abby. She's the Apostle Peter's wife. You have to go to a lot of deep diving in the Greek to realize that Peter's wife's name was Abby, and that in reality she was the one that persuaded Peter. The early church legend was that Peter was crucified upside down, and he kept telling his wife, "Remember the Lord, remember the Lord." Well, I turned it around, and so the theology mess up in the ICOC is everybody thinks that Abby talked Peter into getting crucified and to remember the Lord, and her name is Abby, and that's all biblical, you know. But that was something we made up. In many ways, if Kevin's going to say he started that, I have to go and say, really, Sherwin with the Crossroads Singers. Yeah. Was doing stuff that probably fueled a lot of your imagination for what you did when you heard because Crossroads Singers had an a cappella show and they had an instrumental show and they would break it up. And that was also a lot of the where my theology was back then was we couldn't do instrumental music in church. Mm-hmm. So but after church, if we had an official amen, we could do anything we wanted. And I sort of then further split the arrow, said, well, it'll be an a cappella musical. And so it was, but we synthesized voices. And when you hear, I think Sherwin still cringes when he hears it, because for all of the hours and all of the work, it sounds like we had a Central Park calliope on a merry-go-round playing while people sang. But it's really all voices, live a cappella or synthesized vocals. And how Sherwin and I both wish we had just had an orchestra. It would have been.
And we did that the second time. Drew, you might want to watch the second one.
We did that a couple of times, but Sherwin nearly died the last time we did it, so we don't talk about that one very much.
Well, you mentioned something that's interesting. You know, Restoration Movement, not necessarily known for its appreciation of the arts, kind of threw out the baby with the bathwater in our early history. But when you put together this musical, it had huge mass appeal for the Restoration Movement. And I'm sure there was a lot of outreach to a lot of people that, you know, were invited that weren't Christians and came to see this. But how do you think that made such an impact and resonated so deeply with people who, you know, largely not known for our appreciation of the arts? What do you think was ripe for that connection?
I think it was Steve's incredible brilliance, and seriously, to put this all together, and his background in theater was certainly helpful. And I had never done musical theater before, so it was all new to me. And I remember one time just telling Steve that I didn't have enough faith to do this, and he said, "Well, I've got enough faith for both of us."
Oh, so, that's cool.
He said, "Yeah," but I think it just brought the New Testament to life. That's what I thought, that these characters became real. When Abby, Peter's wife, starts talking about remember the Lord, he says, remember how he held our children. Remember when he entered into the city. Remember when you were on the catching the fish. All these things, and you're just like, oh, these are real people. And then, of course, they're up there singing and dancing. I'm not sure how much that's real, but real life. But it was a musical, you know, and it was like real. And I think the first one we definitely followed right by the scriptures through the book of Acts, or counting all the way through. And so I think it was that. It brought the scriptures to life with real people.
Yeah, I feel the same. Today, The Chosen has just electrified people because it makes Jesus real. You go, wait a minute, this is not like, I mean, this makes sense. These are real people. Well, that's what Upside Down did, I think, for the first time for so many of us. I agree totally with Sherwin's comment. It is Steve's brilliance, being able to, his passion and love for God, and the scriptures, and his background in theater, that's just, you know, look out world, because he turned Acts 2 and the thousands of people getting baptized into a song called The Big Splash, and with a rock and roll singer and style. And that's just brilliant. It connected with people, and it, you know, the Church of Christ is kind of known for the belief in being baptized. And so we just kind of had a good time with it. It was a big party. Yeah. And that was just one example of many things like that in that musical.
Well, thank you both. I know what you mean. And of course, how many of us grew up in the Church of Christ? No. I know. Yeah. And Sherwin was converted into the Church of Christ there as a, were you a freshman?
Freshman.
You were a freshman. Started, yeah. And Sherwin came from a Pentecostal background and had music. Music and church was all intertwined with Sherwin, right? But I know what you mean, Drew, when you talk about the restoration movement, but the, not to be argumentative, but the argument to that is what we had growing up were Christian colleges. And in the Christian colleges, it's not to compete with bigger programs, other places, or certainly the kids that go to Juilliard or stuff like that. But if a Church of Christ person grew up and they were artsy and they went to a Christian college, there was some place that you had an outlet. And I wasn't really a particular, I was always an artsy kid, but I wasn't involved in stuff like that in high school. But when I went to Freed Hardeman in Tennessee, which was, of course, the only truly saved school of all of the Christian colleges, because all the others, I mean, and, you know, Lord help Pepperdine. A lot of people don't even know that Pepperdine was a Church of Christ school. But when I went to Freed Hardeman, if it hadn't been for Hank McDaniel, Henry, Dr. Henry, he became he got his, I watched him get his PhD over so many years. But if he hadn't pulled me under his wing, I probably would have, I don't know, Lord knows what would have happened to me. But he was my mentor and friend, and he and my dad did the wedding for Lisa and me. But it was his influence more than anyone on the planet to make me want to create or to write or to learn how to I couldn't tell a beginning, middle, and end, outside a brief anecdote and a sermon to save my life. And I learned all of that from Hank. And actually got the idea, it was probably, and I'm making this part up, but I know how my head worked. It was probably watching Sherwin, and this isn't just a mutual admiration society. I'd never thought about doing music in the Church of Christ like Sherwin did it when he was with this Crossroads Singers group. And it was probably sitting there listening to Crossroads Singers do something that I got the idea that the wheels started, the squirrel started running in the cage. And because it wasn't that many years later. I mean, at our old age, from the time I first met you to the time that I said, hey, let's do this musical together, it was less than 6 years, which back then, you know, six years crawled along like a glacier. But for a kid that went to a Christian college, and that was really where I got inspired with what theater could do, what music could do. Seeing Sherwin, and then just having all these toys to play with, and I don't mean to minimize people, but we had all these phenomenal singer, dancer, actor people. That were coming to church in Boston, and then in New York, it just got amplified. So anyway, I just want to say another thing, Drew, you sort of caught me at a time. I spent my early years being really critical of my Church of Christ roots and how, you know, and a lot of things. And I look back on it and think I was just really, really lucky. Really, really lucky to get to experience things the way that I did. And then to get to be, and look, and I'm just a preacher. I was a preacher going to New York City, but it was the most awesome place to go with all these awesome people. And there wasn't anybody to tell me no. after Kevin let the genie out, if Tom Glauner can shout really loud with an orchestra behind him in front of, what do we have then? We probably had 5, 6, 7,000 people or more in the mm-hmm. in the I don't want to lower the number. It was Boston Garden, right? It was just full,
and, right?
But since Sherwin doesn't remember, I can say anything here, Kevin. But since I promised Sherwin that night that we would do something, and you did that in 1986. Do you remember that, Kevin? That was 1986 mm-hmm. that you did that. And the next year yeah. is when we did Upside Down in the Boston Opera House. So from that night until then, that was Kevin lit a fire under us.
Yeah. Drew, you touched on something, Steve. Go ahead, Sherman.
I was just going to say, you mentioned about how the arts had been kind of stifled in the Church of Christ. And I know the one Church of Christ guy that I knew that was famous was Pat Boone. And that was back in the day, and he was a Church of Christ guy, and a couple of others, but you're right, they were kind of few and far between. But I think one thing that Steve also was revolutionary in is at that point in our movement, we were very strict about Sunday service, Bible talk, Wednesday night. Midweek was always Wednesday night. If you weren't there, you were on the weekend, you know, something was wrong. Yeah. And Steve opened it up because we were having actors, I mean, successful Broadway people that were having to give up their careers because they had a Wednesday night show. And Steve and Lisa are like, well, why can't we just meet on Thursday afternoon or Thursday lunch? And all of a sudden that just opened up a whole way for freedom for these actors to be able to be part of the church and not be stifled into this, you know, very conservative approach to church and what it means to be at church.
Have y'all experienced people who were like you, Steve, that felt like there's no place for me in this community of faith to worship God or to glorify God with the gifts that I've been given? And then the light bulb come on and like, oh, I can do that. Have y'all witnessed people like that who've really felt this welcome and appreciation by getting introduced to these more artistic, imaginative ways of worship?
Yeah, big time. So many people. And if when I think of Boston, especially early on, we just wanted to, we took the Great Commission very seriously, but there wasn't one way to do it. And we really believed that the church was made up of many parts and everybody had different gifts. And so let's figure out how to use our gifts to reach out to the world. And I think that passion for the mission and having an openness to use people's gifts, you combine passion with people's gifts, and you're now there's many, many ways to do it. And so I think the work in the New York City church, being able to use all the, and it wasn't just New York City, of course, they just were such a light in inspiring artists in particular, all the arts, to be able to usher the gospel in for other people. It inspired churches throughout the world to do the same thing. And I think, you know, if you take any kind of church, there's going to be this segment of that church that's creative and, well, why do we have to do it this way? Let's do it this way. And I think the leaderships that embraced the creative people seem to really hit a note and help their church grow. And many times leaders can be nervous about that, those mm-hmm. kind of creative people,
yeah.
the actors and the passionate musicians, and they're afraid that they're gonna, you know, cross lines. And in fact, they are the ones that cross lines. They don't color in inside of the lines. So I think that what stands out to me is that the passion for the gospel, they found a place to be, use their gifts in a passionate way.
Yeah. Thank you, Kevin.
Well, I think that I hate to use the word paradigm, it gets so overused, but I think almost from the beginning, at least by the time the apostles were dying, I think being able to distinguish the way Jesus is the way from our way has always been a problem. And I think that anyone that leans towards Christianity, whatever denomination or background, and there are certainly groups that are way more liberal than other groups, but you get experience to what your way is. And being able to outgrow the idea that the way I do church or the way we do church is what Jesus being the way, the truth, and the life are all about, that's hard to break through. And I think that is one of the things that has always limited what any congregation, no matter how great, no matter how great you think you are, you're very, very limited to this our way kind of thing. And I don't know that there's much of a way to escape it, because you like what you're familiar with. And if what you're familiar with is there's a book, chapter, and verse, and you can say we're doing it right and they're doing it wrong. That's how I grew up. But the answer to your question is people are still going through that. We right now at this moment, we have people going to congregations that are very sweet, loving. Sherwin goes to a big congregation. Kevin's in a house church format. I've got a little bitty sweet group of people here in Portland. We're three guys worshiping in three very different ways. Mm-hmm. And all of us, I know, still have people that are like, I can't find a place with you. I don't really fit with this group. I don't really fit with that group. I don't really. And it makes me think, well, first of all, there's so much I don't know and understand, because I think that's always the situation. And then guys that have lived like I lived, you try to think, well, how can I make this for everybody? Jesus did. And somehow we miss that, because Jesus is for everyone. And we make these congregations and these fellowships and denominations, which is, well, this is our way. And if you don't like our way, then the kinder people say, go somewhere else, you know, good luck, God bless. And a lot of us that were very legalistic, me growing up, say, well, you're going to be lost. You're going to, you know, you our way or hell, you know. So it was, it's a lot to break out of. And I think it's just something that every generation, everywhere you go to this very day, there are people that will visit a nice, sweet church, whatever kind, and say, but I don't really fit in here. Sherwin and me, especially, we were very, very lucky to be in New York. Kevin's lucky too. Kevin's had a whole different way of being successful in the church, in music. Sherwin and I, the path we were on, we were just really lucky to have all these incredibly talented people that ordinarily would not have gone to a Church of Christ to save their, well, to save their soul. They wouldn't have. I'd rather not do that. But it was for a very, very brief, for a very, spit on the griddle in historical senses, in a historical sense, but for a very, very brief time, it was amazing the people that came into Manhattan to go to church with us that would have never darkened a door someplace. But, you know, that was true at the University of Florida with Crossroads. And and that was what got my attention. And I was never a Crossroader. Sherwin and I still argue about a lot of, you know, these glory days sort of things. But the amazing thing to me about Crossroads was there was a Church of Christ doctrine being taught that I could find no fault with, but thousands of college kids were getting baptized. And I always grew up, we were always the evangelistic family in the church. That was just, I was the church boy. And there were a lot of things I didn't like about Crossroads, a lot of things I didn't like. But when I saw people getting baptized, I mean, I grew up, you know, to this day, I've always sort of thought that's all the restoration movement brought to the party. You've got Christendom, But us restorationists were like, well, you know, you got to get baptized. You can't write that out. And I think I misinterpreted a whole lot of things around that subject, but doggone it, we're not going to leave it out. You know, you can't leave that out of the book. That's out of the story. That's part of it. And that was, anyway, blah, blah. I'm saying a lot, but I think that's Drew. I think that's always going to be the case. And you're going to have people that come and say, where do I fit in? Yeah. And we were just really lucky. We had a place for talented people to fit in for just a New York minute, as they say.
Yeah. That was really powerful what you said about distinguishing that Jesus is the way, that our way is not the way, it's Jesus is the way. That's so important, so powerful to remember, but yeah, so easy to slip back into, but you know, but the way I'm used to is the right way. Try to hold other people to that standard. Yeah, Sherwin, you know, with your experience with orchestras, I have a friend who plays the tuba, and once a year, I think for Christmas, they have a tuba orchestra, and it's all tuba playing Christmas songs. Something is lost. It's interesting. It's an interesting listen, but something's lost there. Tell me about speak about Christ through the metaphor of orchestra, if you don't mind. What do you think orchestra reveals about the body of Christ or who God is or something like that? Feel free to wax eloquently.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, I didn't read that question beforehand. But as you're saying it, it's like, an orchestra is certainly like the body of Christ. You've got your percussion, you've got your woodwinds, you've got your strings, you've got your brass, you've got your harp, you know, the different instruments there, the different colors. And I do think the body of Christ is like that. And you got the tuba player, you know, and you may not understand the tuba player or like to hear the tuba at Christmas with several of them, but it's like that plays a very vital role, you know, in the orchestra. And I was very fortunate in Boston when I was there, I got to usher for the Boston Symphony. So I went there to hear these incredible musicians every week, you know, passing out programs, and then I'd get in to see the thing free. But it was just, there's something about strings. It's just live. It's music. It's like a voice. And I think so many of the instruments do try to imitate so many characteristics of the voice, just that breath. And I think it's living. It's alive. There's nothing like live music. And what you said about, you know, I don't want to watch a musical on TV or, you know, on the screen, it's really hard to capture that, just the live feeling of something. And so, yeah, I think it represents well the body of Christ, and God is the ultimate conductor and pulling it all together and choreographing it and making it all sound great in spite of our differences and shortcomings.
Mm-hmm. And not just in spite of the differences, like the unity is so much more beautiful, and, you know, like it's not unity if it's, you know, everybody's the same, that's uniformity, but bringing in all those different voices and thinking about the, you know, the church and all those different expressions just in this gathering that we're on here, part of different kinds of churches and different sizes and ways of coming about things, but having Jesus as the way or as the ultimate conductor, you know, just brings us all into harmony. I think there's so much there that we could talk about, but you know, like talking about experiencing an orchestra live, every time I am in an orchestra or a musical or a ballet where there is full orchestration, it doesn't matter what the theme is, I'm crying. Like it just, when the orchestra keys up, something emotional happens. And I know that's rare for me to listen to a sermon and get that emotional, to be that into it, to where I feel something so deeply, and there's no words to the orchestra, and yet it connects. You have any idea why that is? I'm just curious, because I'd kind of like to stop being such a crybaby at everything I go to, but how is it that music can just connect so powerfully without even, you know, touching our intellect?
Don't call yourself a crybaby. Cry, baby. I mean, I think that's the answer right there. Yeah. It's legalism is always something somebody else does when you're, you know, if you grow up in a very legalistic approach, it's like politics, or it's just something that you can get so ingrained and not be able to break free of it. But the, there is a sad aspect to people whose religion prevents them from hearing strings or orchestras in church. I was never a musical theater. I liked theater a little bit. I liked theater because that's where the girls were when I was going to school, and it was easy. It was an easy A. It was just an easy thing to do. But I didn't like musical theater. It still is not my favorite art form. But it hit me somewhere between Chattanooga and New York that musical theater and church went together. That and if you look historically in church history, the Passion Plays and where so much theater came from on the steps of churches to get people to come in, the idea of music and theater and church going together. I think the reason you cry is why you know, do you cry when you see a rainbow? I mean, if I'm emotional enough, I can. I don't, you know, I'm like you, but I don't ever apologize for crying. And to me, we just can't deny there's something in it that is whether you're a disciple of Jesus or an atheist, there's things that touch us. Bad people like music. Good people like music. Everybody like, and that is because we're children of God, I think. And it's colors, music, sound, all these things they go together because of the way God made us, I believe. And again, it gets back to these rigid forms we have of this is how you do church. You know, I mean, no wonder it's been hard to get some people to come and impossible to keep other people. It's just, it's something that we turn this open invitation from God so many times into a closed set. Mm-hmm. And, I think I'm Kevin, what would you answer, Drew? I'm sorry. I didn't mean to.
Don't be.
All the air in the room, but this is
honestly, this is, I think this whole idea of just emotion, we're not comfortable experiencing it as a group. We can relegate it to private moments, where we put on our headphones and listen to a symphony and bawl our eyes out, or whatever kind of music that moves us. But when it comes to church, you know, I grew up in a very Protestant type. That's the way I describe it now, tradition. And that was the Church of Christ. That was, I guess we were in the anti group. So it was all a cappella. Now, that said, I have vivid memories of sitting between my dad and my mom, and I probably was put in that position to help control me, because we had seven kids. I was right in the middle. And but my mom sang alto. My dad, I wasn't sure what he sang, but it was in tune. It was beautiful. He sang melody sometimes tenor. And the older ladies around me would always tell my parents that I made up, you know, different parts, but it was beautiful. And so this, I remember as a little, I'm talking 4, 5, 6 years old, remembering something about how my voice vibrated when it was with my mom and my dad, or just one or the other. Mm-hmm. So the idea of having a different kind of voice, but it fit. It wasn't a theology to me. It just was beautiful. And I'm grateful that I grew up hearing harmonies, hearing people's voices singing together. But soon I learned about rock and roll, and I'm from South Louisiana. So Southern rock And then one of my older brothers was really into Broadway, and I'd sneak into his room when he wasn't there and listen to Broadway musicals. And there was even this, he had a record of gospel, a black gospel, and it just thrilled me. And so, but when it came to church, I knew I needed to be straight and controlled. but then when I became a Christian, when a freshman in college, the church I was a part of there was more on the liberal side. They would have been called liberal by the antis, but they were much more emotional, embracing, and they started. They would sing songs from Maranatha out in California, you know. But I remember thinking, "Wow, there's some emotion," I've developed an opinion about things or labels over time, where you just go, "Wow, there's a lot of emotion with that, and that's a good thing." But I just think we have got to not be afraid. Emotion isn't going to lead us down the path of sin, you know. And passion has to do, and having compassion, it has to do with experiencing emotion. And if our worship times can't, I think it's one of the reasons I believe a lot of artists end up leaving a church is that there's no way to say it that way. But is that there's not an appropriate way to experience and express emotion. And so with groups like the New York City Church, and being able to embrace artists, embrace passionate people, not be afraid of them, but to thank them, show us how to be expressive. You know, looking at in a marriage, if you can't be expressive with your wife, if the old saying was, you know, the old farmer said, "I told you I love you. Well, the day I married you, if I change my mind, I'll let you know." You know, that's just dumb. We have to keep knocking ourselves out and being fools, expressing our love for our in this case, wife. And I think in church, we've got to not be afraid to get emotional. It's why I think, and I've shared this personally with Sherwin before, but I heard the Crossroads Singers when I was a freshman, and that really laid the groundwork for church and beautiful music in my mind. I heard things that I'd never heard before. I'll put it that way. There was some 4-part harmony, but there was more harmony than that in some of those songs. And it just, it's his fault that went on to do more, because I was so inspired by that. It moved me emotionally, and it was okay in that way. It gave me permission to do things with emotion. So thanks.
If I can add to that, Kevin did a piece, "I Will Be With You Always," that was based on the symphony, "The Planets" by Holst, and used a lot of that, and just, it was amazing what he did with all a cappella voices. And it was like a really long piece, and it sustained you through that whole thing. It was very emotional. Had an opera singer, a baritone, a soprano solo, narration, and just, it was epic. It was really epic. And was one of the first time I heard what was really an orchestra piece just being performed by voices, and just amazing the emotional appeal that had. Samuel Barber wrote a piece, Adagio for Strings, that is also, he also voiced it for a cappella voices, and it's just incredibly moving. It's been featured in a lot of movie tracks, but yeah, I understand the emotional part of that. And I think we are afraid to express our emotions sometimes, and not allowed to. I remember being very melancholy and introvert, you know, as a disciple, and that didn't really fit the, you know, what you need to be extroverted, you need to be out of yourself, and need to be happy all the time. And So I think we've been afraid to express some emotions and feel them, that it was wrong. And certainly as men, we've been taught that, you know, at an early age. Big boys don't cry.
Yeah. That reminds me, years ago when I was, I took the church hymnal that I grew up with, that we were using, and I just did a study about how many songs were in a major key and how many were in a minor key, and what years were they written. And I'll just, you know, jump to the end, and it's basically there was a handful that was written in a minor key, but they were done almost in a major way. And why that's a big deal is because we associate emotionally major key being up and positive and happy, and minor keys being more melancholy, more sad or reflective. Mm-hmm. And it to me, that psalm book kind of, I look back on it now and I can place words like it was kind of emotionally immature. Because where I live is not in, I don't live in a major key 100% of the time.
Yeah.
I personally live more in the melancholy. And I'm not wishing that on everyone. I'm just saying I'm trying to live more in a major key, but respect the moments of where I need to be melancholy. I feel like we completely miss out in church music that there's so little blues. I live more in the blues, you know, genre, and church needs to at least reflect yes. that. So
yeah, I love that. Like if you look at the Psalms, like how many of those would be in the minor key? I mean, you got all yeah. the laments,
absolutely,
and it's we skip over that because everything's got to be happy clappy, but that doesn't resonate like. You were talking about earlier with, you know, sitting between your parents and they were singing different parts and you were doing your own thing, but you've sensed that the vibration in yourself was connected. It resonated with what was going on with around you. But when we make churches just all about the happy stuff and you're feeling sad, then there is no resonance. There's nothing to connect you with that. And yeah, that's tragic. We need more laments in our modern worship. I mm-hmm. totally agree. Yeah. So specifically thinking about the arts and imagination, what would be some wishes that y'all would have for the future of the church broadly or within your own stream? What are some things that you'd like to see as the church moves forward and advances the mission of God?
To me, I have a difficulty even using the words "the mission of the church." I still believe in it, but I grew up so sectarian, and it has taken me a lifetime to realize that, and try to think what is an alternative to that. You know, what if you're not supposed to be sectarian, then what are you supposed to do? And I think about, I'm fond of saying, I learned the Bible from racists. What else were they wrong about? And remember, I said earlier on, I'm spending most of my life now being very thankful for the way I grew up and the influences I had, as imperfect as it was. That makes me think about the kids that grew up in congregations where I was the leader. And they grew up with somebody that went to Rambo movies. This preaching on Sunday in a very major key, not a minor key. So what else was I wrong about? And God bless Sylvester Stallone. All I'm saying is this is a lot of it. I think as humans, it matters a lot. There's a lot of church things that we make way more important. It actually almost becomes a distraction to what Jesus, I think, is really all about. And some people almost always have to sort of go around church to find Christ. And I'd love to change that. I don't know, you know, especially at this age, what to do about it. But I think that there are a lot of people right now that are learning music and theater and learning Bible. I think if we live long enough, we'll see. Something that might even look a little foreign to us or might seem a little weird to us, But God's going to bless it. God's going to use it, and it's going to be okay. But to answer your question, I mean, what would you like the music in the church, if you take, and I don't even know all the different flavors of Church of Christ there is now. I don't know all the different flavors there is of ICOC, and then the groups that have split off, you know, from what we created. But I think in all of it, it would still be nice. I would still enjoy it. I always compare it to biscuits and gravy. I would still enjoy pulling over on a Sunday morning in some rural place where there's a Church of Christ and go in and listen to music that's probably just about the same as it was when I was a little kid in 1960, 63 and 64, 65 going to church. You know, that, mm-hmm. Surely there's some place like that. I'm not saying that that's all. There's surely some places like that because those things, there's something lasting about it. But anyway, I don't know.
There's one thing I'd like to share about that. What we imagine church to be or what it could be is moving forward. I think it's a lot simpler. It helps if we can make it just simply church, community, whatever way that means. And it's probably been for the last 20 years now. I've been, when I would lead worship in a congregation, I would do my best to try to I'd ask a lot of people in that church, hey, how could we, the worship, you know, team or the us leading up here, how could we help you to connect with God emotionally during these times? Is what we're doing working? Does it help you or does it not? Does it distract you? Are you bored? Please say whatever, you know, you're not going to hurt my feelings. And I would try to talk to the kids as well and not lead them out. And I learned a lot. Things that moved me and have moved me for so long, it bored them. And I realized there's just not a whole lot of right and wrong. So one of the best things I think any church leader could do is ask their people, is what we're doing in our times on Sunday helping you? And if it's not, what would help you? You know, what songs would help you? I've always been a believer in, if you're leading worship, you got to do the heart music of the people in that church. You know, whatever that is, if it's gospel or, you know, whatever version of gospel or contemporary or old school, you got to kind of do it all as best you can. And, but I think it takes, you got to be humble to ask and then try to deliver on that. But especially ask the kids, ask the youth, help us out, guys. Because the last thing I want to do is try to infuse the next generation with something that it was just an opinion. I love this kind of music because it's what I grew up with. I, you know, experienced emotions with it, but you experience different. We need church to be an experience, an emotional connection with God.
Yeah.
If we can do that, I think you're going to help people.
That's awesome. Sherwin, you were going to say something.
Yeah, I was just going to say what I would like to see in the church, I think, is for all of us to kind of rediscover what God intended for music to be, and that God created music, and that we are all full of music. It talks about in the Bible, the morning stars sang at creation, talks about the planets praising God and things that we can't even hear, but they are doing the music of the spheres kind of thing. And I think being able to study that and learn that and instill that in people's hearts, how important that is. I know at Crossroads, that was so important in our worship. It's like when I first came to church there, I mean, it was amazing. I was a piano player and there was no piano. I had no job, no place, but the voices were just amazing to hear that. I think if we could get back to honoring and respecting this gift that God has given us and being able to support that, much in the ways that Steve supported the actors and singers and dancers up there in New York, that we're able to do that. Like Bach, you know, was supported in many ways by the church, was funded by people who believed in music and was able to devote himself to that. We've all been fortunate to, in some ways, be part of a church staff or be in music somehow. But many times, you know, when it's kind of out of vogue, then you're leading a ministry, you know, and that's what you're supposed to be doing. And the music gets pushed to the side. So I would like to see music become, have the proper place that I think God intended it to have. And he's put it all around us. And sometimes we don't even recognize that.
Well, thank you all so much for this conversation. It's been a delight to talk to you and hear about your experience with theater and with music and just the way that y'all have creatively engaged with people, all with the purpose of connecting them with Christ. And that's a beautiful, beautiful thing. And I look forward, I hope to keep in contact with y'all and see what is coming up for y'all. But just really thankful. Any last words before we wrap this up?
Thank you for making this happen. I know it was not easy getting all of us together.
Yes, same here. I adore Steve and Sherwin and what God's allowed us to be a part of together for many years. I still feel like this young kid going, wow, I get to be with these guys. And but it's men and women using their gifts to bring glory to God. And I honor that so much.
Remember the Lord.
Yes.
Well, thanks again. And as we close out, I want to remind our listeners that we at Common Grounds Unity have a vision to create and support gatherings of unity-minded Christians around the globe. We want to imagine the good news of these gatherings, modeling the prayer of Jesus in our divided world. We welcome any comments or suggestions, and you can do that by emailing me at drew@commongroundsunity.org or John Teal at john@commongroundsunity.org. And if you're benefiting from this ministry, we'd greatly appreciate you to consider making a monthly donation to support the work that we're doing. And you can do that by going to www.commongroundsunity.org/donate. Thank you so much and see you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Common Grounds Unity podcast. Please check out commongroundsunity.org to learn about who we are and to find gatherings in your area. You can also subscribe to our monthly digital newsletter, join the Facebook group, or find our YouTube channel. Until next time, God bless, and remember, unity starts with a cup of coffee.